morning's reading is from Romans 12, verses 3 to 8, and can be found on the Pew Bibles on page 1113. For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment, in accordance with the measure of faith God has given you. Just as each of you has one body with many members, and these members do not have the same functions, so in Christ, we who are many form one body, and each member belongs to all the others. We have different gifts according to the grace given us. If a man's gift is prophesying, let him use it in proportion to this faith. If it is serving, let him serve. If it is teaching, let him teach. If it is encouraging, let him encourage. If it is contributing to the needs of others, let him give generously. If it is leadership, let him govern diligently. If it is showing mercy, let him do it cheerfully.
Jenny, thank you very much indeed. Then through Romans in chapter 12, which we began last week, which asked the question of us, what is the background music to your life? What is it that's always playing in the background? What shapes the decisions you make, the places you go, the words you speak, the things you do? What has been the background music to your life this past 7 days? Oh, hang on, picking. As I say, if you're with us, then Paul begins at chapter 12 by calling for all those who follow Jesus to give themselves wholeheartedly to God, not in order to earn God's forgiveness, but in response to God's mercy, in response to how God in his mercy saves people who don't deserve to be saved, how God in his mercy adopts rebellious people who wander from him, adopts them into his family, even though all they've done often is ignore him and run from him. In view of God's mercy, how any of us can be forgiven rather than forsaken, justified rather than condemned. Paul reminds us that it's the remembering of God's mercy, verse 1, living in light of God's mercy, having God's mercy foundational to the Christian life. All we do is in response to God's mercy. It starts with him. And when we remember God's mercy, well, the only logical, reasonable way to respond is to give back to God all we are wholeheartedly in his service. And as we saw last week, that response brings with it a need to be transformed through a renewing of our minds. Paul says in verse 2, we're no longer to be conformed to the world. I wonder if you noticed, as Jenny read it for us, as we pick things up in verse 3, Paul mentions thinking words. It's actually 4 times. I'll explain what I mean. First heading, remembering God's mercy leads to right thinking about ourselves. Verse 3, in a more literal translation, says this. Do not think of yourself more highly than you ought to think, but rather think of yourself with sober thinking. Verse 3 is all about thinking. Sober thinking, sane thinking, sober judgment as we have here. Sort of honest appraisal of ourselves. In view of God's mercy, God's mercy is like a light, then it helps us see what we're really like. What does it mean then to think soberly about myself? Well, Paul tells me, I'm thinking soberly when I think in accordance with the measure of faith God has given me. Now, I don't think that means, when we hear about measure of faith, we start thinking about amounts, don't we? I don't think Paul's talking about those with more faith, in the sense of a greater measure of faith, will be able to do this better. And so they're teaching in this passage. Having more faith, greater measure, cannot be a cause for looking down on others. I think actually what verse 3 is talking about is talking about the measure that is faith. The measure of the faith, the Christian faith. The measure by which we are to think soberly about ourselves is the faith. Christians are to evaluate themselves, in other words, in light of the gospel. See, when I see myself in view of God's mercy, in the honest and frankly unflattering light of the gospel, well, then I see myself as unworthy, as a rebellious person who's been saved only by God's mercy and grace. So when I see myself rightly in view of, by measure of the faith, well, there's no place for pride, is there? No place for boasting. Mercy takes away those things. When I see myself in view of God's mercy, that leads to sober thinking, sober judgment. Let me try and illustrate this. I may claim that I'm pretty tall. I may even say, well, I'm the tallest person in the world. But that will, of course, depend on what measure I use. So if I take my wife, Zanna, as the standard, well, then I can take great pride in my position as the tallest person in the world, because compared to Zanna, well, I am taller. But then if I stand next to someone like Richard, who's leading our service, well, I realise by that measure, I'm not as tall as I thought I was. If I only measure myself against Richard, well, I'll think I'm very short in comparison. Everyone must be taller than me. Neither of those two actually give me a true sense of my height. I'm not to measure myself against other people. What I actually need is a ruler or a measuring tape. Then I will be able to, with sober judgment, assess just how tall I actually am. That's all very well talking about height, isn't it, in those terms? But here's the thing, when it comes to rightly thinking about ourselves, not just our height, but our very person, our very identity, well, at that stage, comparing myself to others will never lead to sober judgment, to a right assessment. It will either lead to pride, I consider myself better than those I measure myself against, or it will lead to low self-esteem because I consider myself worse than those I choose to measure myself. Mercy is the great leveller, isn't it? I choose to compare myself to others, is it? It wasn't because of something to do with my merits, so I can't take up to others. But rather than comparing myself positively, comparing myself to other service. As I mentioned last week, we can of course speak of worship as being what we do here on a Sunday morning, and that is true. But it's striking, the first example of true worship, spiritual worship that Paul calls us to in this chapter, is about the way we behave towards one another in a fellowship, in a gathering like this. But Paul's not talking about singing or praying. He's talking about worship that is expressed in service to one another. He doesn't talk about me in these verses. He talks about us, about we. So secondly, remembering God's mercy leads to right thinking about other believers. See, Paul introduces in verse 4 the image of the church family being like the human body. This may not be, this may be very familiar to us, but a body is of course one entity, but with numerous parts and organs that have different roles. It was a long time ago now, I studied to be a physiotherapist, spent 3 years learning the anatomy of the human body, but you don't need a degree in physiotherapy, do you, to understand Paul's point in verse 4. You know that a foot is different to a knee, is different from a hand, an eye, an ear. All parts of the same body, but with different functions. And so just as the human body is made up of different parts, but all belonging to the one body, they're interconnected and interdependent, aren't they? So the church family, as Christians, we must see ourselves as individuals, yes, of course, but also as connected to, belonging to, dependent on one another. See, I need you and you need me because we belong to one another in Jesus Christ. To work, not just in principle, but in practice. Well, we need to be humble, don't we? We need to live in view of God's mercy and be humbled by that. Because if I'm proud, I will say, well, I don't need the other members of the body. I'm just fine on my own. They need me, of course. And if I'm feeling particularly generous, then I might oblige in helping them. Well, that'll just serve to make them realise just how important I am. But it won't be unity, will it? And a dependence on one another. Similarly, those who think too lowly of themselves, not in light of God's mercy, but in light of comparing themselves to others, well, they'll think, well, I have nothing to offer the body. I'm not important. If I'm part of the body at all, then maybe I'm the appendix or something. Small, irrelevant, occasionally painful, and easily removed without anyone even noticing I'm gone. But of course, that doesn't breed unity and interdependence either. the humble person will recognise that God's mercy is the great leveller. I won't be comparing myself based on the gifts they have or the size of their bank account or their home or the things they do or anything. I won't be comparing myself to others at all. I'll recognise that in view of God's mercy, we're all, as Paul says in chapter 11, we're all disobedient, we all need God's mercy. And when I understand myself aright, well, that gives me the humility to understand the body aright as well. However, Christian sister and brother gathered here on a Sunday morning, in light of God's mercy, we're all on the same level. We're all part of the same body. We all need one another. Christopher Ashe, the Christian author, puts it like this. Although Christianity that does not begin with the individual does not begin, Christianity that ends with the individual ends. See, Christianity must begin with the individual, with a person coming to have a personal trust in Jesus. We are saved as individuals. That's absolutely true. We are made right with God at an individual level. That is wonderfully true. But from the moment we turn to Jesus as individuals, we're not only reconciled to God, but actually to fellow believers, to his body here on earth. And that, of course, finds its expression most keenly on a Sunday morning here, local church gathering. So Christianity isn't only ever about that vertical relationship with the Almighty Creator. It is about that. But as soon as we're brought into right relationship with God by his mercy, we become part of it. Thirdly and finally, remembering God's mercy leads to right serving of other believers. We were thinking a bit last week, once we get our thinking right, our actions follow. So we're thinking about ourselves, right understanding about one another. What do we do with that? Just think? No. We serve. If I was to ask you whether you were a fan of bodybuilding, I don't quite know how you're part of the body, but also bodybuilding. We are united in the one body, but within this unity, there is a diversity of gifts among us. And Paul addresses the question, well, what do we do with those gifts? Who do they serve? See, gifts are given to each and every Christian for the building up of the body. So think of the human body again. See, what the eyes, the ears, the hands, the feet all have in common is that they're part of the same body. But they all have different functions, don't they? So too, a church family, says Paul. Now there's a list there in verses 6 to 8. It's not an exhaustive list of gifts given. It's just a representative one. There are other lists in the New Testament of gifts that God gives to his people. But the point of the list is to highlight that the members of the body are given different gifts. God doesn't give gifts to his people to grow their individual pride. Rather, God gives different gifts to all his people so they can serve and encourage one another, so they can build the body. So our gathering here Sunday by Sunday, it's not a congregation of people with a single minister. It is a gathering, a congregation of ministers. The word minister just means to serve. The minister serves the master. We are all saved by God's mercy. We all follow the same master, Jesus Christ. So you might talk of Andy as the minister, that is true. That doesn't mean you're not ministers. We are all called to serve. And we're to serve one another, not with the gifts we think God should have given us, or the gifts we wish God had given us, but with the gifts God has given us. It would be bonkers, wouldn't it, for an eye to say, I'm done doing the seeing thing, I want to focus on hearing. It doesn't work in the body. Paul's point here. We're all given gifts to serve the body. And if we do this in view of God's mercy, the gifts we are given, sing. Otherwise, I would have to do it. I could use my authority to make sure that I have the microphone singing. If you've heard me sing, that won't be edifying or encouraging for anybody. It's not just those things that happen week by week. Great ways to build up the body grounds. People are gifted by God in those areas. So that Paul mentions leading, praying, teaching, encouraging, caring, supporting. Again, all gifts given for the building up of the body. So let me just pause at this point and say that as a church family, you're seeing the way you give to one another in view of God's mighty. It is a great encouragement to know that as a church family, we are committed to this body building. Now, I tell you this not to make you proud, because I don't think I tell you often enough. But I am very grateful for all that you do. So thank you for all that you do. On that note, let me draw to a close. We've been thinking, haven't we, how God doesn't only create us and save us, but gives us gifts for the building up of his church body. But in all those things, we must remember God's mercy. We must remember God's mercy because that puts us on the right footing. That breeds humility within ourselves, which means we're willing to use gifts in the service of others. You see, those gifts mentioned in verse 6 to 8, they're all open to distortion if we're not regularly humbled by God's mercy. See, if we lack humility, what happens is that when we serve at church in ways that actually serve ourselves, the proud server says, if I serve and I'm seen to be serving, people will think well of me. The humble server says, well, because Jesus served me, so I will serve others. The proud teacher says, I will teach so that I feel fulfilled, and others say I'm a good teacher and my influence among people will increase. The humble teacher says, because of God's mercy to me, I will teach others so that they may learn of God's mercy to them, Jesus, and be encouraged to follow him. See, if we don't have humble, we say, I must increase so that you decrease. But if we live in light of God's mercy, we're always saying, well, I must decrease so that he increases. The principle then is that when we use a gift, we are to use it simply in order to achieve what the gift is given for. It's not there to help me build my self-serving agenda. It's not there so that I can boost my ego. Nor am I simply to serve just because the rota says so. Do you know that terrible joke? Church is like a helicopter. Stand too close and you get sucked into the rotas. The rota's really helpful because it's why we had Jenny doing the Bible reading, not Poppy. Rotas are really good. Otherwise we'd all say necessary. But being on the rota is not a motivation for serving. God's mercy is. It's God's mercy which unites us as one body. It's God's mercy that directs us into serving one another rather than serving ourselves. It's God's mercy which gives us the humility to understand that we are all part of one body and we need one another. And yet we are diverse, so we learn to appreciate one another's differences. We don't use differences as a means of making ourselves feel better than someone else. We don't use our differences as a means of making us feel worse than one another. God's mercy is the leveller. But it gives us the humility to serve one another. Use the gifts God has given us, not to squirrel them away in a cupboard, but to serve one another. Because we're all part of one body. And we need one another. That's why Paul lists these things. It's because of God's mercy, because we belong to the body. In verse 6 to 8, he talks about serving and teaching and encouraging and giving generously and leading diligently and showing mercy to one another cheerfully. Because of God's mercy, we don't think of ourselves more highly than we ought. We see ourselves aright, we see one another aright. We see what the Lord has given us and we seek to serve.